Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
Proud of the team. I'm fighting. I wish we could have played there to win the game and got away from us early in the first half. But I thought at least offensively kept coming back and coming back. And Felipe played an excellent game in a situation that as a mature competitor as he is, he showed his true colors on coming back and playing so well. And the offense around him did a nice job stepping up. But you know, we'll regroup. I talked to our team inside about life is made of a series of moments and you're not defined by one single moment. Just like we won't be defined by this moment, we're defined on how we respond to this.
Sometimes when you enter competition, you're outmatched. And that may not be what you want to hear this morning, but it's true. Florida had a much better football team than you did on Saturday night. And the offense came in and competed at certain times of the football game. And I think you saw, again, glimpses of what Ken O'Brien's offense can be throughout its entirety. But the defense did not help you out on Saturday night. So what were your reactions to the Florida loss? It's a Hot Take Monday, and we will get into those a bunch coming up, and it is brought to you by Wheels RV this morning.
Yeah, our buddies at Wheels RV are 5 miles west of exit 72 off I-49 in Springdale. If you weren't comfortable this weekend at Deer Camp, you want a new RV or a new trailer, get on over to Wheels RV and let them help you out with the best brands like Grand Design, Alliance, KZ, and the new solar-powered Vibe, and with a lifetime warranty on every new unit, plus a mobile service shuttle. Hey, relax and know that your RV will stay like new year after year. Wheels RV, again, 5 miles west of exit 72 off I-49 in Springdale. Seek, explore, and discover with Wheels RV.
We told you heading into this game that Kyle Trask was a Heisman candidate, top five, top four, top three, depending on who you ask, and he played exactly like it on Saturday night. He had as many incompletions as he did touchdowns. Six. Was lethal on Saturday night. And I think what you saw on Saturday is one of the reasons that Felipe transferred out. It's because Kyle Trask is a tremendous quarterback. Now, it's weird saying that considering he was a backup to De'Arik Keene at Manville. Now, De'Arik Keene is an incredible quarterback in his own right, but this is a guy that's been a backup for a lot of his high school career, if not all his high school career. But what he has done in Dan Mullen's offense, and as unfortunately you saw on display on Saturday night, is pretty special. In the first half, dude had 5 touchdowns and almost 300 yards passing. Just picked you apart. And Barry Odom, kind of like he did against Kellen Mond, he tried different things. He tried blitzing, man, zone, and it just wasn't working. Kyle Trask was hitting everybody. Trevon Grimes really had the big day, over 100 yards and a touchdown, including a really good grab in the back of the end zone. But to me, Tommy, Kyle Trask was just untouchable on Saturday.
Arkansas, I thought the game boiled down to the one fact of, or if you want to point to one thing, I mean, there's many things that go into the final of a football game, but Arkansas was not able to get enough pressure on Trask. They weren't able to get enough push up front. The O-line of Florida was better than the D-line of Arkansas for the most part of the ball game, and that was the difference, is you weren't able to pressure Trask enough to make him uncomfortable. He comfortably made the throws, and as you said, the 6 touchdowns. Florida had no problem executing their passing game, missing Pitts, and their tight end was of no consequence in their game plan. And ultimately, as we talked about, you know, Florida's number 6 in the country for a reason. They're going to win the East and do it easily for a reason. You know, they're a good ball club. Arkansas had to play nearly flawless, and they did not. And ultimately, I think you had enough offense to win. You just didn't have enough defense to win.
And that was kind of the inverse of what we thought might happen, is that you didn't have enough offense. But I think the offense gave you a chance to win. The defense just unfortunately did not get off the plane on Saturday night. And when you look at this football team, we've talked about this before, 24/7 Sports talent composite composes every single player on their roster and what it constitutes as a recruiting ranking. Arkansas is at 25th. Florida is at 7th. So you're vastly behind the Florida Gators when you look at the talent overall of the roster. And the other thing is, you know, sometimes there might be a talented roster, but the coach isn't necessarily a great X's and O's guy. That doesn't categorize Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen was able to win in Starkville, Mississippi. Now he has a much more talented pool in Florida, in Gainesville, in that recruiting fertile area. And I think you saw it on display on Saturday night. Unfortunately, I was really excited based on how the offense had a couple big plays. You think about the Mike Woods opening drive, just a beautiful ball from Felipe Franks. You think about the Traylon Smith 82-yard touchdown. They had some absolute bombs that went off in that game for the Arkansas offense, but you didn't have enough based on how the Florida offense just exploded in that football game.
Yeah, and you know, again, I do you call this one embarrassed? I know you lost by four touchdowns or whatever in this game, so got away from you in the end. I don't know that Arkansas quit fighting. I just think Florida didn't quit playing either, which, you know, that's not on it's not on them to quit playing. In the end of the game, they kept throwing the ball till the end. So you got four full quarters out of Florida. And we talked about that at the end of the week and even on Saturday that, you know, Florida needs to do what they need to do to impress the committee, to run up stats, to make sure they make their case as a team that has at least one loss. Now, if they beat Alabama in the SEC championship, and we're assuming they're going to win the rest of their regular season games, which they'll be heavy favorites against the teams on their schedule. If they beat Alabama, there's no doubt they're going to the playoff. But if they lose to Bama and some other things happen in college football the rest of the way, they want to make a case as a two-loss team they deserve to be in, particularly if that game with Bama is close at the end. Well, running up the score on teams like Arkansas and the other teams that are on their schedule, like Kentucky and like LSU that's on there, like Tennessee that's on there, at least helps make that case a little bit more. And I think that's a little bit of what was going on at the end of that ball game.
They need to be pretty flawless down the stretch. And even if you lose to Alabama, they still, like you said, want to make their case to get into the college football playoff. And
at that point, they'll need help as a two-loss team. Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a battle of two of the top three quarterbacks in the SEC if we assume that ends up happening between Mac Jones and Kyle Trask. I cannot wait to watch that football game at the very end of the season. But back to the kind of, as Felipe always calls it, the task at hand. I think with Florida, you saw from Kyle Trask, like Tommy mentioned, no Kyle Pitts, best tight end in the country, top 10, top 15 NFL draft pick this year. He picked Arkansas apart and did it with a variety of different guys. I think he threw it to like 10 guys in that football game. 10 guys had completion. So he was throwing darts all over the place and just dominated Arkansas from start to finish. You weren't dominating offensively, and we'll get into some more positives coming up. But for a third consecutive game, you rushed for over 200 yards. I'd say that's a pretty big positive. And you're seeing parts of this Brad Davis offensive line that's really kind of seeming to mold a little bit. Now, they haven't pulled it together because you've got two losses where the Texas A&M and the Florida lost. But, I mean, offensively, you didn't have a great offensive outing against the Tennessee Volunteers except for the third quarter. But I think that you're starting to see kind of some cohesion a little bit with that offensive line. It's important. And we're assuming that Sam Pittman comes back Wednesday, assuming he can clear the positive test hurdle and get a negative test. But it's going to be nice to also have your head coaching back. Now, this will be a conversation that we unpack more. I don't think having Sam would have been the difference of you winning or losing the football game based on how that offense played. Now, it would have been nice to have Barry up in the box and him do his usual duties based on how much the defense seemed to be gashed, but I don't think that was the main difference. And I hope fans see through that and our listeners see through that.
I think that's been an overstated angle, is Barry Odom not being on the sideline, not the box, being the difference in the ball game. That to me is overstated and overvalued in a difference in winning and losing in this game.
Yeah, I think it was too. So what was your reaction to the Florida loss on Saturday night? You can call or text us this morning at 877-377-6963.
All right, coming up today, we're going to be telling you how you can win up to $15,000 to pay your rent or mortgage for a year. It's brought to you by Chambers Bank and real estate agents Nick and Ellie Glidewell. Go to hitthatline.com for your chance to win $15,000 beginning today.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house wearing number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
What he accomplished was the 4 best combined rounds ever in Masters history. The lowest total beats Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods' record that they shared, that they put up at 270 at 18 under. So he beats that. Now some will say, well, you know, this was November, this and that. Well, he did it against a course that maybe wasn't the same as April, but he did it still against the best field in the world. There wasn't who was missing, you know, Sergio Garcia. I don't think that was the difference in the field. So, he still did it against the best players in the world. Dustin had his game, and he was able to rip it off the tee, put it in the right spots in the fairway. He had the length off the tee, and he was putting well. He had the short game around the green. So, the guy was he was just nearly flawless for 4 days to get the total up to 20 under par. So, he's been the best player in this weird COVID year, probably the most consistent player, and it's fitting that he has the green jacket on.
So you're saying my putting's going to get better because it's the wintertime?
No, not saying that at all.
Greens won't be as fast?
Not saying that at all. Greens are generally a little bit slower. Now, in the fall, they're faster, but I'm just saying that they're slower compared to April at Augusta. You got to understand the difference in comparison. And we're talking about a minor comparison in the stimp or the speed comparison at Augusta. So greens weren't probably quite as severe in speed for the November round that we've never seen before versus what we will see in April, which is 5 months away.
It was a bummer to see Tiger kind of fall apart. And you said it was we were talking before the show, the 12th hole.
Yep.
He hit
on
10.
Amen corner.
So a little 10 yep. cup action right there. Had some trouble with the water. But what I've told you and what I've said consistently about the Masters, my approach, because again, I'm more of a casual golf watcher than I am consistent. Like I'll watch the majors and that's about it. But for the Masters, I want one of two things. I either want Tiger to win it or I want a guy who's never won it before to win it. And now that does not include Patrick Reed. I was not a fan when he won the award, or the green jacket. But I like to see someone new that hasn't won it or Tiger win it, because those to me are both intriguing. Now, it's more intriguing to see Tiger win it and be in contention, which he was for some of the Masters. But I'd say the 10 on 12 really kind of kicked him out.
Well, he was out.
Really separated. But, it's like done.
Well, you say, done, but did you see what he did over the last, from 13 through 18, over the last, what would that be, 5 holes, 6 holes? Did you see how he finished?
He finished strong, I'm assuming, based on what you're saying.
So you didn't see?
No.
No, but he birdied like 4 of the last 5. So,
once you hit a 10, like you said, he was out of contention. So, I wasn't pit back. After that, it wasn't like.
So even with that. His point being, he'd have finished what? He finished at 1 under, so he'd have finished 7 under if he'd have just parred the hole.
So 13
It cost him 7 strokes to par on that one hole. But it's just very un-Tiger-esque to see him do that. And after the round, when he was talking to Amber there, he said, "I just misjudged the wind. I didn't commit to it. Didn't commit to the wind." And, that's what makes Amen Corner so difficult, is that wind comes around 13 and around that corner and hits those trees and just swirls in there for that par 3. And the flag stick's doing one thing, but then that ball gets up above the pines and it can do a whole different thing. His first shot hit on the fringe or on the apron and just spun back in the water. Then the second one went in the water. And then he went into the bunker and hit it back over into the water. And then that's what makes that hole so difficult, is you have such a narrow, small landing space. And those guys are really good and they're able to find that narrow spot in there to land it. But, the bunker can be your friend in that place, as long as you're not hitting, as long as it's the front bunker. That back bunker can be pretty nerve-wracking too, because that Race Creek's right there in front.
When it comes to Tiger, isn't his deal that he's never won a Masters when he hasn't been leading heading into Sunday?
Majors, yeah. He doesn't win
major
majors.
In general? Okay, yeah. So he has to be.
He needs to be tied for the lead or in the lead. He doesn't stalk them down. So he's a front runner. He, in a horse racing terms, he's a front runner. So he's the guy that, but he doesn't relinquish leads either very often. So once he's out in front, there's been very few occasions he gives up the lead.
So what else stood out to you about this weekend as far as the Masters goes? Because, again, you're much more of the golf person on this show, and I'm just kind of
it's hard to, you know, what also stood out was Cameron Smith, the Australian, four rounds in the 60s. That's good enough to win any other time. I mean, here,
what did he finish at?
He's finished second, tied for second with him, and he was at 15 under par. I don't have it printed on, maybe it's over here in front of me, but four rounds in the 60s. He didn't even know it until that he was the first guy to finish four rounds in the 60s and not win. You know, that's really impressive. Like I said, in any other year, he's your champion. But Dustin Johnson just had a career 4 days there. So that stood out to me as well.
Anything else? I mean, I'm kind of letting you have this segment because I don't watch.
I think just some of the international play, like we mentioned Cameron Smith from Australia. You had the Korean player that played well. I mean, this is really, truly an international event. That's why they invite so many players from around the world. Gives you a great field. Tiger being competitive. I know, we've talked about the 10 he had on number 12, but it tells you for all those that think Tiger's game is dead, buried, and gone, it's not. I think the dude still wins another Masters at some point. He's got the game for it. He just needed to play more probably coming into this. So watch out for him to be competitive and I think be a factor again come April next year. So I think he proved once again this course brings out the best in him. So
and it'll be nice next year to have it in April and then have it with patrons, as they call it down there.
And I guess another thing that kind of stood up, Bernard Langer, 63 years old, making the cut. Oldest guy to ever make the cut by about a month and a half. So that was kind of a neat note that Jim Nantz pointed out. So got a check for the weekend.
How much did he get?
I don't know, but near the tail end of the field, but I'm at five figures, I know. So
if you make the cut, you automatically get.
Yep. You're going to get a check.
Jeez. Yeah, we were talking about this before the show. Dustin Johnson's career on the course earnings, $67 million. And that does not include any endorsements or anything. He just, that's talking, and you said what? Your Masters win guarantees you what? 30 to 35?
Yeah, generally the total, I mean, the purse is not that. I mean, you win about $1.8 million from the club as the winner. But then you're in a normal year, and I don't know what 2020 is going to mean, but in a normal year, your appearances, your endorsements, new endorsements, bonuses from your current endorsements, all told, being a Masters champion is worth to you about $30 million.
It's a combination of a bunch of things. That's a good chunk of change as far as that goes. So, but cool to see Dustin Johnson's brother, who's been a caddy with him since 2013. He was very emotional in the final hole, and you saw that Dustin Johnson has competed in a lot of different majors, had a bunch of top 10 finishes, had a bunch of top 5 finishes, and finally got that elusive green jacket on Sunday, which was really cool to see.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
First, I want to welcome in Danny and Russville to the conversation. Danny, you are on the Morning Rush.
Good morning, guys. The good news, we scored 35 points against a very good team. Bad news, we go up 63. Do you feel like, with all the blown coverages, that having a fill-in head coach caused those problems, or it's just we got big problems to fix? I don't know. It looked like last year to me, receivers running wide open. We weren't. I don't know. We were so confused in the secondary. Florida's good, right?
How many times has it looked that way this year so far, Danny?
Two. Against A&M, we were the same way. We couldn't get off the field. Did they punt once or twice?
They punted one time in the ball game.
Yeah, that's not going to get it. You got to get off the field. And I know we were close a couple times to getting off the field, but that counts as hand grenades and horseshoes, so...
And did not have a three and out. You know, had a No. A turnover on downs in that second drive, but only after seven plays. So,
and when we scored, it was so fast that our defense was right back on the field. I mean, almost every scoring drive we had was 2 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. So we were on the field the whole night. I don't know what the time of possession was, but it was lopsided, that's for sure.
Yeah. Time of possession, Arkansas had 21 minutes and 12 seconds. Florida had it for 38 minutes, 48 seconds.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, I just want to get your comments on where we go from here and how we get that fixed. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Danny. Here's the deal, Ty. You got beat by a good team. Got beat by a great team. Arkansas is approaching being a good team. You know, and we want to compare everything to last year. You're not a great team. You're not a really good team. You're just a good team. You're just an okay team right now. You're 3-4. You are what you are right now. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We want to be on the level that Florida and Alabama and these teams are so bad. I think in time, with the right offensive line and the development in 2 or 3 or 4 years, I know we don't want to wait that. You'll have a chance to maybe be that. But Arkansas's just okay, maybe a good team. We're not really good. We're certainly not great. Florida's either really good or great. I'm not sure which they are. There's only a handful of great teams in the country. I'm not sure if Florida's even, we're going to find out if they're a great team. I'm not sure if Florida even qualifies as a great team yet. Are they up there with the elites, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, perhaps Notre Dame in that conversation? I don't know. They may belong there by the end of the year. That's who you played on Saturday. They're one of the best 5, 6, 7 teams in the country right now, it appears.
Now, I think you'll find out where Florida is, the barometers, what they do against Alabama in the SEC championship game, and what you're saying as far as getting outclassed on Saturday, which you were outclassed. You were outclassed in the defensive side of things, not necessarily on offense. I think the offense, once again, rushed for over 200 yards, third consecutive game that you've done that. When you look at this football team, they were just beat by a better team. Kyle Trask is a Heisman candidate for a reason. He's top five. I mean, he supplanted a reason why he should be in New York based on what you saw on Saturday night. And we got a text earlier that was talking about how it seems like now people are saying, well, what you do against Arkansas defense is like really qualifying you as whether you're good offense or not. Well, I'd say if that's the actual case, which I don't know if that's a direct barometer, it is, but I'd say what they were able to do against Arkansas defense was pretty impressive. I think the defense would have been better if Barry Odom was up in the box, but we'll never know.
Well, is it because Barry Odom would have been up in the box or because Barry Odom would have had nothing more to focus on than the defense?
I think it's a combination of both.
So which is it?
It's a combination of both.
Exactly. So I think the idea that Barry Odom's view of the game is the reason Arkansas got beat so badly, or number one, it's not the difference in the game. I think it's a combination of that along with the distractions of the week and how the preparations probably went. But let's not forget, all of that is secondary to the fact that Florida's just better than Arkansas, all right? So don't put that secondary to anything other than the fact that Florida's a better football team than Arkansas, and they beat you soundly because they're better, all right? So don't gloss over that fact. Not that you are, but nobody should gloss over the fact that Florida is a better football team. Arkansas could not get pressure on Kyle Trask and make him uncomfortable and miss throws. He was highly accurate. More touchdowns than incompletions. What is that a result of? Comfortable. That is a result of being comfortable. So Arkansas did not get enough hands in the face, enough pressure on him. Well, they had one sack in the ball game. I mean, you've just got to do a better job of getting to the quarterback, and Arkansas couldn't do that.
Hopefully you'll get a better chance. I think T.J. Finley is going to start for LSU on Saturday, if I remember that correctly. Maybe it's the other guy they're going with.
No, they haven't played in 3 weeks.
Yeah, so hopefully you'll be able to get after whoever's suiting up for LSU on Saturday a little better than you get against Kyle Trask. You're not playing a SEC Player of the Year or a Heisman candidate on Saturday. The quarterback competition is taking a deep step backwards, and you're at home, which should bode well for you. 877-377-6963. Going to Dear Arkansas, welcoming in our residential Tennessee Volunteers fan, Craig. Craig, you're on the Morning Rush, man.
Morning, fellas. I had the joy of not having to suffer through a Tennessee game this weekend, I was able to be all Razorback. You know, Nick Saban you might have seen it or spoken about it, made the quote that defense doesn't win championships anymore. And I know people want to blame the Arkansas defense, but I'm telling you, if you had scored three more touchdowns, that's three less touchdowns, they have the chance to score because you've got the freaking ball. And look at Alabama right now. You know, they're just outscoring people. This idea, you know, that's what's wrong with Potato Head Pruitt over Tennessee. He schemes on how he can shut down teams, fires his defensive line coach when he doesn't realize his offense can't score. And so it's all about offense, 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 offense. And Florida is, why are they better? They just got an offense that, just like LSU had last year. LSU's defense became elite because the other team was gassed. They couldn't stop the freaking offense. And your defense can only take so much. That was what was – we're in a brand new – it's almost like Southwest Conference heavy or Big 12 heavy, I should say. And defense does matter. But if Arkansas had scored three more touchdowns, you realize you know, how many three and outs did Florida have?
Zero.
You know, that's the question. So that's it. You take those three and outs and extrapolate the time it would take to go down the field and score, that's three less times that offense gets the ball. And so that's just, you know, everybody wants to blame the defense. I'm telling you, it's the offense. And I think Felipe Franks is almost comeback player of the year. I think he is comeback player of the year. I'm proud of the dude.
Well,
I can't stay in Florida. But anyhow.
Craig, here's the only reason I would just to play the other side of that argument. The number of drives. Now, one of the drives that Florida gets credited with was the scoop and score, but both teams had 13 possessions in the ball game. The difference is Florida scored 9 of those. Now, 8 of those 9 touchdowns they had was offense. 1 was the scoop and score. Arkansas had 13 possessions. They scored on 5 of them, so it wasn't a lopsided number of they had the ball. Now, they had more time of possession. They just were more efficient with the possessions they had. So, you know, the difference is Arkansas's offense, and I think that's kind of what you're saying. Arkansas's offense wasn't as good. And I would just look at it from the other side. Arkansas's defense just wasn't up to the task of stopping Florida's offense. I guess it's potato potato, or however you want to look at it.
Right.
The defense couldn't get the stops. You're looking at it as the offense couldn't get the scores. So.
Right. Well, I'm saying you better be ready to put 40 up if you're going to be competitive in the SEC right now. These days of 17-10 ball games are done. You better be able to spot 40 if you're going to be. Look at Georgia, an elite defense, and they're irrelevant because they have no offense. Hey, I'll shut up. Y'all have a great day.
I tend to agree with you there, Craig. Craig. I think you're right, and I think the game is trending that direction. Not just the SEC. I think the SEC's been behind the rest of the country, but I think it's trending that way because that's the way high school football across the country has been for more than a decade trending this direction.
I think the prime example would be what Nick Saban has done with his offense. You think back to the Trent Richardson, Mark Ingram, Eddie Lacy, those days where they're just pounding it, cloud of dust, cloud of dust, cloud of dust, and then they've since changed. They hired Lane Kiffin. He signed Brian Daboll. Mike Locksley's at Maryland, Steve Sarkisian, a number of different coordinators that have been pulled more of a spread offense and an up-tempo offense, and you've seen guys come in like a Tua Tagovailoa. Mac Jones is having an incredible year. They've changed offenses. When the best college football coach in the country maybe ever decides that, hey, he needs to change with the times, that's when you know something significant is going on as far as that goes. Back to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Going to Rod on I-40. Rod, you're on the Morning Rush, man.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, we lost an elite team. That's all there is to it. I mean, they're just a tier above us for now, but Dan Mullen's had longer to get it together there, and he's got a really good recruiting ground to get it together with. But, you know, I don't think we were ever going to beat that team, honestly, not this year. Maybe next year we could do it, or even for sure, like the year after that. But I am 300% better off than I was this time last year because we've got 3 SEC wins, which is more than we had in 2 years of Chad Morris. I mean, it hurts, but we're all better off position than we were, and it will get better as time goes on, I believe.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I appreciate your call this morning. When it comes to just kind of what you're discussing, yes, you're frustrated with how the game ended and how the defense couldn't stop anyone, but you're still looking at what would have happened last year under Chad Morris, and that team would have gotten beat 70-3. And Arkansas was at least able to compete offensively. And again, that the outcome, what you saw on Saturday night, was not what you wanted, but at least it is something. And then again, as Rod mentioned, three SEC wins. Great opportunity this Saturday, 11 a.m. in Donald W. to get win number four against a rival in LSU. Bring that boot back home, which many of you want to do. This is just such a better outlook for this football team and this program than you were a year ago today.
Surprised Arkansas is a three-point favorite?
First time they've been favorites in an SEC game since?
We talked about this last week.
Quizzing you again.
Wasn't Ole Miss, you told me.
2018. We were watching it together.
Vanderbilt.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Yep. So that's where you have to go back to the last time Arkansas. And there's good stat from Hutch as well. I need to find this. So Hutch put out an excellent stat. Third time Arkansas has been favored against LSU, Tommy, since 2003. Do you know the other two?
No, I don't. Not off the top of my head. No.
2010 and 2014.
Well, that makes sense. 10-10 certainly makes sense. So, hey, we're brought to you by The Fence Man, the company you can trust when it comes to building your next fence or fixing some gates for you. I can tell you because they built some gates for me, and they've done some work for us here at the radio station. The whole process, anytime you deal with a fence man, is going to be quick, easy, and more importantly, affordable for you. Plus, they have 18-month, same-as-cash financing available with The Fence Man. So if you need new fences, new gates, or anything that involves a fence, call our buddies at The Fence Man, 479-782-3936. That's 782-3936 for The Fence Man. He ain't afraid of no work.
We'll get back to your calls in just one sec, but I do want to get into some of these quick headlines. Tommy mentioned Arkansas is a favorite this weekend, and not only is the statistic stand out because Arkansas is rarely favored against LSU, you think back to last year, Arkansas was a 42-point underdog in last year's matchup, and now they're a 2-point favorite. So the line has swung 44 points. Right. Last season's ball game.
I'm going to plant my flag on this right now. I want to claim it at 6:44 in the morning for our show before anyone else gets this one.
Okay. Feel free.
This is a matchup between the two programs that's changed more than anyone in the country this week. No one's had more change, more opposite direction. I'm wording this horribly, but hopefully I'm getting my point across. No two programs are more different this year than these two matching up this year. Think about it. National championship last year for LSU. Arkansas, 2-win program, didn't win a conference game. Long SEC losing streak. All of these things. LSU, top of the mountain. Look at where they're at right now. Are there two programs that have converged and went in opposite directions more so than LSU and Arkansas, certainly in Power Five, and they're matching up this week? Two programs headed more in the opposite direction than any other two programs in the country, I believe, right now, matching up this week, LSU and Arkansas.
You're not going to get any disagreement out of me because I kept telling you.
What's that worth for in this matchup? I don't know. It's about energy. It's about enthusiasm. LSU hadn't played in 3 weeks. Their last game was on Halloween. But I think that's an angle that's worthy of conversation when you think about where these programs were a year ago when you bring up the line and where they're at and just the energy and enthusiasm around their programs.
So I was screaming from the mountaintops before the season began that I thought LSU was going to be terrible. And that prediction has held true. And I know that we had a couple LSU listeners, two buddies I went to high school with who were from Baton Rouge and New Orleans area that were so angry with me. And so, like, how can you look at that? And then Jamar Chase opts out. Miles Brennan is now out for the season. So Arkansas. And remember, LSU, since the game got canceled to Alabama last week, they've been game planning for the Razorbacks. But it is interesting to see how far that program has fallen. And speaking of fallen programs, this news breaking, it's probably the biggest news that came out of the weekend as far as SEC football has been concerned. Will Muschamp is out at South Carolina. Yeah. This was huge. And this is so odd to me because, one, we're in COVID stuff right now, and you would think that athletic departments don't have really buyouts to pay, but a lot of a lot of former players, a lot of current players voiced their frustration with the move. This is from the, I think it's the Daily Courier down there in South Carolina, that they have to pay him a $13.2 million buyout, plus his salary is $487,000, $10,000 a day from now till December 31st. So Will Muschamp has a lot of money coming his way, and it'll be curious to see who South Carolina goes after as their next head football coach.
They're banking on him getting another job somewhere quickly to offset a lot of that, number one. I'm with you. I'm surprised, and we've talked, and I still stand by what we thought. There wouldn't be very many firings across the Southeastern Conference and across Power 5 college football this year because schools don't have the money to pay. South Carolina is not one of those schools you thought would be one of the first to pull the trigger, and here they are pulling the trigger on Will Muschamp. I watched some of that game, had it kind of on the second TV as I was watching the Hogs on Saturday, and you know, he was all up in the officials. He was clearly frustrated and yelling, which is not new for Will Muschamp. I made a tweet on Saturday that you know his last breaths are going to be drawn yelling at an official. I mean, that's seemingly all he does. He doesn't coach. He just yells at officials during the game. And I think sometimes that distracts him from the job at hand a lot of times. But they had an end-of-half situation where they put a second back on the clock. He was very upset in that Ole Miss South Carolina game about that situation. It led to a field goal that put him down at the half, and obviously kind of makes you wonder, looking back on it now, that he know he was coaching for his job heading into that ball game. I think oftentimes these outcomes where these guys get fired, they know it going into games, Ty, and that's why they sometimes the pot boils over during a game because they know, I can't afford to lose this game.
Yeah, no, and that's the question. And also, just it was just weird to see an SEC head coach, like you mentioned, get fired as far as that goes. All right, last quickie headline for you, and then we'll get back to your calls. Alex Collins back in the NFL. He was signed by the Seattle Seahawks practice squad. It was a week ago, and then he plays on Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams. Had over 40 yards and a touchdown to go with it.
Here's a toss to Collins running left. Cuts up field and is in for the touchdown. Alex Collins out of the league and now back because of the injuries at running back. Carries it in from 13 yards out and the Seahawks are on top.
Good luck trying to catch Alex Collins.
They have a big-time game against the Arizona Cardinals this upcoming weekend. The Cardinals, if you watched any NFL Sunday, I know many of y'all's focus was on the Masters, but this would have been the 3 o'clock slate. DeAndre Hopkins went up, former Clemson wide receiver, former Chad Morris player. He went up over 3 guys and made an incredible catch. They beat the Buffalo Bills in the closing moments. There's 1 second left on the clock, but they have a big-time matchup against the Seahawks this upcoming weekend. I'm pretty excited about that. See a little Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson action this weekend.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch a whole lot of NFL because I'd spent a whole lot of time since about 8 o'clock yesterday morning watching golf, so I had a few things I had to get done after about 2 o'clock when the golf went off. But so that's good to hear that Alex got that done, and glad to see maybe this will help him stick around a little bit longer.
Yep, so. Exactly. Back to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Going to JW in London, Arkansas. JW, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey, good morning, y'all. Hey, I think the real significant thing that contributed to Florida's win, their dominating win, besides their quarterback, and Arkansas's loss, was Florida's 4 senior down linemen who are all going to play in the NFL. You cannot underestimate how that changes the game. And I was just amazed at how good they were. We managed to get by their defense once, but boy, their offense was tough. They gave that boy plenty of time to throw, and we've got some studs on defense, but man, they were something else. Yeah. Anyway, I'll just listen to your take on that.
No, I mean, we were making the point earlier, and I think that's one of the biggest differences in Arkansas and Florida. Arkansas couldn't get pressure on Trask. One sack in the ball game, he was just too comfortable back there. Ty made the point right out of the gate this morning, and it's a good one, and it tells a lot about this ball game. He had more touchdown throws and incompletions. I mean, so...
6-6.
Or they were equal. Okay. So, I mean, that... And I hadn't even thought about that till you said it. I mean, there's when you're that comfortable in the pocket, you know, that you're too comfortable in the pocket. So, I mean, there's a factor right there that Arkansas has got to overcome against the great teams. Arkansas has been able to do that with Jonathan Marshall and push and drive the center back and make the quarterback run, make the quarterback do a lot of things against teams that are more average. Florida's just not an average team. I'm not ready to say they're an elite, great team, top three or four in the country, but they're playing their way in that direction. And they may end up in this playoff and be one of those four really great elite teams this year. They are right there on that edge.
That is going to be a dynamic quarterback matchup between Mac Jones and Kyle Trask coming the SEC championship, assuming that everything shakes out like we think it's going to. I'm really excited about that matchup because I think we've been going back and forth between those two guys along with Matt Corral. I think Corral is a little outside of that, even though as good as he's played. I don't know if his interception performance against Arkansas knocked him out of that conversation, but I think that football game between Alabama and Florida is going to determine who's the best quarterback in the SEC, and based on what you saw on Saturday night, there's a good chance that Kyle Trask and company have a chance to beat the Alabama Crimson Tide.
I agree, because I don't think Alabama's defense is stellar this year, and with Pitts, if he's healthy, and he will be for that Alabama game, I think their offense is on par to doing it. It'd be a matchup of two great offenses, you know, in Atlanta this year.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time we're coming for the whole damn thing.
All right, it is National Fast Food Day, and I think we need to constitute what this. Jenkins, hop in here, because I know you're going to want to do this. What constitutes the rules? Because we've already got a couple texts in here, people's opinions on that. What are the rules and regulations to having the best fast food? National chain with the drive-thru.
That'd be my rules.
Now, can it be like a pizza place that has a drive-thru, or is it just
National chain with a drive-thru.
So would you classify like Subway or Firehouse or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty much any. Okay.
So yeah. Are they national chains? They have drive-thrus.
Okay, so what's yours?
Do I look like I eat fast food? Don't answer that question.
I was going to say.
Don't answer that question.
You have a pristine figure.
Yes, don't answer that question. Whataburger's hard to pass up. I'm a burger and fries guy. Are we talking budget or are we talking...
That's a good distinction.
I mean, that's a good distinction. Are we trying to spend less than $5 or is budget of no importance here?
No budget.
No budget?
What you got?
Well, double it. Whataburger's hard to beat.
On a budget.
On a budget. McDonald's
$7 or less.
That McDonald's $3 McDouble and small fries hard to beat for on a budget. So,
what's yours, Jenkins?
Honestly, probably for me, it's Sonic. I'd go there at least twice a week. But I mean, I know it's not the best food, but it's quality and it's fine for me. But like you, budget, you can't hardly beat a McDonald's. For me, my go-to McDonald's is a McChicken, McDouble, and a sweet tea, and it's $4.
Yeah,
and it fills me up and it makes me happy.
Yeah.
I don't stop by McDonald's that much, to be honest, but I do like it when I go.
In high school, it was Taco Bell.
I don't go very often.
Really? Nick from Greenwood texts and he says Taco Bueno. Now, you guys Taco Bueno fans?
Don't get near one. Well, I say near one. There's one near my house, and it's like I never get to it. It's hard to get in and out of from where I'm at. So, no, and I'll tell you why. When I go there, I don't order tacos. They're always broken. By the time I get them home, which is it's about a mile from my house, the tacos are broken. So, no.
Rod says the Wendy's double. Do we have Wendy's fans here?
Bad, Wendy's is a good one.
Yeah.
Burger King would be up there as well.
I'll tell you another one. If I no budget, it'd be Popeye's.
Oh, yes.
Popeye's hard to beat.
I forgot about Chick-fil-A. No budget. Yeah.
That was our Sunday. That was often what I had on Sundays was Popeye's. So Wendy's was more of what my friends like to, they call it, they get the 4 for $4. They say, I'm going to D's for the 4 for $4. And they did that every single time. Jimbo and Hackett text in. He says, for breakfast... this is interesting. He's saying for breakfast is Wendy's. Now,
It's Hardee's.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Hardee's, hands down. It's not even close.
He said lunch, go to Hardee's, and then dinner, Sonic.
Well, so Hardee's is good for lunch, too, but Hardee's breakfast is the best in the world.
Is that the best fast food biscuit out there?
It's not even close.
I don't think it's close either.
I don't even think it's close. The number two is the summer smoked sausage. Egg and cheese, can't beat it.
I've not had that. Now, friend of the program, he tried the new the prime rib brisket, and he just says it's unbelievable. Yeah, he said it melts. He said it melts in your mouth.
Hash browns, yeah, crispy. Get them a little crispy. Fry it a little extra 30 seconds or something.
I need to try that. The smoked sausage one. That sounds really good. So Nick from Greenwood also said Brahms is his favorite breakfast. So
Brahms ain't bad. Yeah, and the biscuit at Hardee's, those.
I think it. Can't I don't. Beat it. I don't think there's a debate. What's your favorite breakfast if you had to choose?
Oh Lord, probably a Hardee's breakfast. I mean, everything they got on their breakfast menu is just.
I don't think it's
fantastic.
I don't think it's touchable, to be honest. No, like it's I think the consensus.
Everybody else is playing for second.
Yeah, I think the consensus is that. So Chad in from NWA also says that the Hardee's prime rib biscuit is fire. So I would. I think I need to make my way over there and try that after. Yep. So
479, I do agree though. Chick-fil-A, like no budget Chick-fil-A, but I'll tell you what, Chick-fil-A breakfast is quite underrated. Their little chicken breakfast burrito chicken thing minis, is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat, man. It's hard to beat.
National Fast Food Day, where if you're just hopping in.
Yeah, if you want to text in 877-377-6963. What I've been asking for quite some time, and this is a Eastern restaurant, I think it originated in North Carolina, is Cookout. I've probably
never been there.
It's phenomenal. You get
where's the closest one? Nashville or somewhere?
Memphis. Memphis is the closest one. It's open till 3 o'clock in the morning, and you get an entree and
starting to see why you like it.
Yeah, an entree, two sides, and a drink for a little over $5. It's incredible value. It's an incredible deal. But I would say,
and it's good food for $5.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're eating it at 3 a.m, how do you know the difference?
And I ate it either late or I ate it for lunch, and it's fantastic regardless. I would say In-N-Out's pretty good too. For those who've been to made their way to the Dallas area. And I forgot where In-N-Out, they're at another one.
Dallas is one place I've had it. Arizona's another place. Of course, California. So
my parents told me that the one originally in Cali is the better one. They've been to the absolute original.
It's okay. I mean, a lot of what happens on places like In-N-Out is you have this, you've been told about it. Now you've got this high bar in your head, and then you have it, and you're like, well, it's just okay. And that's kind of what I thought about In-N-Out. It's just okay.
I need to, I haven't had it in a minute. It's been a couple of years. So I want to try it again. Let's welcome in Bubba in Prairie Grove into the conversation again. 877-377-6963. Wind it down here on a Hot Take Monday brought to you by Wheels RV. Bubba, you're on the morning rush, man.
Guys, I was a little bit disappointed that it took y'all that long to get to Chick-fil-A. The breakfast is supreme. Everything on the breakfast menu for Chick-fil-A. The burrito is on point.
We were just waiting in line.
The thing you got to remember about Chick-fil-A is, yes, the menu is limited, and I will readily admit that, you know, there may be a better chicken sandwich somewhere, but here's the thing about Chick-fil-A that elevates it over the top. You know exactly what you're going to get and what's going to happen every time you go in the place. You know you're going to get a good quality meal. You know the restrooms are going to be clean. You know the service is going to be on point at all times, and it's going to be amazing. Okay, Whataburger, don't sleep on the Whataburger breakfast.
Nope.
Pro tip here, jalapeno cheddar biscuit, sausage, egg, and cheese. Go get one right now and then thank me later. Okay, sausage, egg, and cheese on the jalapeno cheddar biscuit. The honey butter chicken biscuit from Whataburger is suspect. It's good. But you have exactly 13 seconds to get it eaten before the honey erodes the biscuit, and then the next thing you know, you got a shirt full of biscuits driving down the road. Okay? And hey, just to let you know, I'm 6'5", 290.
Yes, sir.
I know my way around a fast food restaurant. Yeah. I know what I'm talking about. So holler at your boy. Yeah. Listen to what I'm telling you. Hey, I ain't going to steer you wrong.
Yeah.
Everybody talks to the fat kid to figure out where to come eat, all right?
Yeah. Bubba, I need to go hang out with Bubba one night.
Bubba, never trust a skinny cook.
No.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, Bubba knows his way around a two-lane drive-thru.
Hey, Sonic, I would rather eat dirt and poop rocks than have to go to Sonic. If it wasn't for the drink, I would have zero reason to go to Sonic.
That's valid. That's fair.
All right, I don't know what you guys are talking about, but I can do without Sonic all day long and twice on Sunday. If you're down in Alabama, Jack's fast food place. It's not Jack in the Box, but it's Jack's down in Alabama. Hit that when you way down south. You're in media days next time. That's us legit. And hey, Bucky's in Texas. Bucky's is amazing.
Oh, the convenience
stores?
It's
everything you want it to be.
Yeah.
What's that?
The convenience stores, the super convenience stores. Yeah.
It's everything. It's like if Walmart and Come and Go had a baby.
Oh, man.
You're right.
Bubba, great call this morning. Might have been the best outing.
Yeah,
it's people
call
get,
of the day.
People
Thank
get
you,
heated about politics, religion, sports, but food might bring out the best and worst of us, as some might say. But
great call, Bubba.
If someone, you're joking, Bubba, you're talking about Jax, as in Jack, and you're differentiating the two, the Jax in Alabama and then the Jack in the Box. If someone would have called in and said Jack in the Box is the best fast food place, they would have immediately been dropped.
Yeah.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.